It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you go into a totally darkened room, you can't see a thing, but you know where the light switch is. The moment you flip on the light switch, tell me, what happened to the darkness?
It vanishes.
Yeah, it's not a trick question. Darkness cannot survive in the presence of light. And so that's what's going on here on a planetary scale.
30th Anniversary Edition. The name of the book, Nothing in This Book Is True, But It's Exactly How Things Are. So in 30 years, you can imagine there have been a few updates, changes, enhancements, improvements. Bob Frizzell is the author, and I'm going to have him kick it off and tell you how the whole thing came about in the first place 30 years ago.
Well, okay, Wendy, thanks for having me on. First of all, I just want to say thank you for that, because I really enjoy talking about, well, you know, you would too, talking about your favorite topics, and that certainly is what I write in my books. So how did this all came about? Well, I've got to go way back in the day, actually about 4 or 5 years before the book was ever considered as a possibility. The idea of writing a book was so far beyond any capability that I thought that I had at the time. And to give you an example of it, I was a teacher of breathwork back in 1988. I still am a teacher of breathwork. But back to 1988, one of my clients, after a number of sessions, she did a series of about 10 or 12 sessions. And about halfway through, she showed me her diary. She was keeping a very detailed record, not only a very detailed record of the sessions that we were having together, but she was also putting it in the form of a book. And she let me know that she is an author, and she suggested that we co-author a book. And I'm going to myself, I'm going, gulp, what? No, me write a book? I didn't think I had anything to say. I didn't even know how to write an article, let alone an entire book. And anybody who was a published author, I just said that was the greatest achievement on the planet. I certainly couldn't do it. And I just asked her a few questions. And she said finally that, you know, well, we don't have a publisher. So what we'd have to do is to write a book proposal and then take that around to various publishers to see if we can find somebody who will actually publish the book for us. I used that as my excuse. I said, nah, I don't want to do that. I didn't tell her, but I just thought to myself that the only way I will ever write a book is if a publisher comes to me and asks me. And of course, I thought I was safe. But that's exactly what happened. 4 years later, in October of 1992, I got a call from a guy named Richard who wanted to come and do some breath work with me. And he told me a little bit about himself on the telephone, and I wasn't, you know, no big deal, just basically setting an appointment. So he came and we did a session. He told me a bit more about himself. And about halfway through the session, he had an experience that I think was beyond what he thought was possible with regard to doing a breathwork session. And so all of a sudden, he just, you know, it's just like a new dimensional aspect of him opened up. And now we had some space to talk and to really communicate. And he let me know that he was a publisher. Not only just any old publisher, but the publisher who did Richard Hoagland's book, The Monuments on Mars. Well, this went right into the area of my greatest interest, because for a couple, 3, 4 years prior to this now, I had been studying it just came to me intuitively that there's missing information out there that I need to be aware of. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that I had the entrance requirement, and that was the burning desire to find out. And if I just, you know, followed my nose, so to speak, it would lead me exactly to where I needed to go. And, of course, that's what happened. that led me to exploring the anomalies on Mars. If you're at all familiar with the face on Mars,
yeah.
But not only the face on Mars, but the pyramidal structures in the area that's known as Cydonia. And the geometric layout in all of that is just too much to be a coincidence. Richard Hoagland is one of the first people to bring that out. And so when he mentioned that he was the publisher of Hoagland's work, I just immediately started pumping him with questions, you know. What about this? What about that? And, of course, I shared with him what I knew about Mars. The least of my intention was writing a book. And, of course, that's exactly what happened when he called me one day and asked, would you be interested in writing a book on what he called the esoteric meaning of the monuments on Mars? And of course, my first thought is, well, no, I'm not an author. But then I quickly realized what I decided 4 years earlier, and I just came to the conclusion that there's higher forces at work here. I mean, this is not a coincidence. It couldn't be. And I went gulp and said, well, all right. Now I'm out to write a book, and I didn't think anybody would buy the book. You know, maybe my parents, family members, stuff like that, few friends. But quite to my surprise, it became an overnight sensation, and I found myself, really the next thing I knew, getting on a plane, going somewhere just about every single week, going to my mailbox. This was before the internet. This came out in August of 1992. And in my mailbox, there was an average of, per week, about 50 handwritten notes, each one of them telling me what my book has meant to them, how it was a life changer for them. And I'm sitting there going, I did that?
There's more than just the book, because in your session that you had with Richard, you gave him an assessment of his breathing, because that's what you do. And that was a huge factor in his response, I think, and reaction to you and thinking you're the guy for this.
Richard said in his own words, because he wrote the foreword to the book, that he brought his dark cloud with him. But that's what I mean when I said about halfway through the session, he had a breakthrough that was truly exceeded his expectations. Because what breathwork is, as I teach it, is it shows you how to discover, first of all, and then how to master your innate ability to transmute what had been life-detracting stuck energy as a result of suppression and as a result of all the judgment that you and I individually and collectively are engaged in on a very polarity-wise planet. We're in a constant state of judgment. And every time you and I do that, there's a twofold aspect of what's going on here. First of all, there's the judgment itself, you know, like this, you really are bad and wrong, and I'm really right and good and all that stuff. Using that as an example, there's usually a fair amount, if not a lot, of emotional content that's associated with that. Well, anytime you and I judge anybody or anything or have any sort of a thought, really, there is two aspects of it going on. There's the conceptual aspect. There's the I'm right, the you're wrong, the judgment. And there's an instantly generated pattern of energy in the body that I just simply call a sensation, or even more simple, a feeling. That corresponding feeling that's instantly generated from the make-wrong thought can only, because the thought behind it is an unpleasant thought with the emotional charge attached to it, the corresponding feeling can only be an unpleasant feeling. Now, you and I, at least most of us, like to feel good. So we don't want to carry around that yucky feeling. And so what we've learned to do is do our very best to distance ourselves from that unpleasant feeling. It's called suppression. And I detail it in my books. We're all very good at it. If suppression is the only technique that you have to try and deal with that unwanted, unpleasant feeling, what happens is the body becomes a reservoir of stuck energy, because that energy doesn't go away, even though you suppress it. It lives in your body in the form of what I call stuck energy. And if you don't learn how to deal with it consciously, it's going to start dealing with you in very, very unpleasant ways. You know, like constant anxiety, just for starters, frustrations, anxieties, and all the emotions that you don't like and don't want. And then further along the road, it starts popping out in the form of illness and disease. And so learning how to transmute the energy, you've got to discover your innate ability to do that, because we all have that. But the fact is that we've been holding our breath as a result of all of this suppression, holding our breath relative to the possibility. I mean, if you're totally holding your breath, we wouldn't be having this conversation, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most people are walking around the planet subventilating, breathing much less than they should. And as a result of that, never, ever even discover the possibility of their innate ability to transmute stuck energy into life-enhancing energy.
There's a couple of examples you give in terms of when people are stressed or when they have an initial response to something that frightens them, they hold their breath. That's almost inherent in everything that we do. The automatic reflex reaction is to go, and hold your breath. And that doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a perfect example of what I mean when I say that we have a planet full of people walking around subventilating, literally holding their breath. When push comes to shove, we are very much trained to do exactly as you said, hold our breath and hope that we can gulp the unpleasant accompanying feelings down far enough to get them out of the way. That's suppression. That's suppression on steroids, actually. Nikola Tesla said it perfectly, the most brilliant scientist we've ever had. He said, if you want to understand the nature of the universe, you got to think of it in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Well, I make the point very clearly in my books that you and I are perfectly functioning holograms of the one creator. That means that the whole of everything is contained within us. That means if you want to understand us, you got to think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Not just that, but it's very useful to begin to realize that the body is energy. And in its natural state, energy wants to be in motion. When energy is vibrating at a high rate, then we feel good, because the high vibratory rate of unconditional love, of joyfulness, of creativity, of compassion, all the good stuff, that's high vibrating energy. Low vibrating energy is all that stuck energy, the fears, the frustrations, the anxieties that you can't handle when you're too busy trying to suppress all of that. And so what Breath Alchemy, as I now call it, does is it shows you how to take that very stuck energy that you've been trying to deal with and to transmute it, to transform that same energy into life-enhancing energy so you can feel good again, so you can get on with your life. You know, most people would rather feel joyfulness and inner peace than frustration and anxiety. And so that's what Richard experienced. And that's what opened up the possibility for us to talk. He came for the next 29 weeks to do a session. He liked it that much.
There are some people that you, in terms of the testimonials I have seen and read about, there's a shift overnight, immediately, in the first session, and that's amazing.
Yeah, I tell you, I've been around the block many, many times with that, Wendy, and the only reason I know that is because I've been there and I've done that. Everything I have done has been a matter of necessity. Back in the day, I painted myself back into the corner so firmly that there was no way out. And I just had to find a way to deal with all this stuff that was just consuming me and also creating all sorts of unpleasant physical symptoms in the name of a low back injury that just kept getting worse and worse and just started taking my life over. So I had to find a way to heal myself. And in the course of doing that, I began to realize experientially, which is the only way you can realize anything, really, even though conceptually, but, you know, it's just so what at that point. Until you get it inside and know it as your living experience, you don't know it. And I began to know as my living experience that all of my miseries, including my low back injury, which was doing a pretty good job of crippling me, was all a function of my unresolved emotional trauma from childhood. And that's what the stuck energy heals, when you learn to transmute it into life-enhancing energy. So I was able to heal myself on all of these levels and get on with it, and therefore to teach others. So I've been at it for a long time, And it took a long time in order for me to learn enough to be able to totally and completely transmit that to other people. So yes, they can have an amazing transformation in their very first session. And that's only the beginning, because we do a series of sessions. But a lot of trial and error, I'll tell you, to get to this point. Sorry for anybody who was a casualty. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh yeah. We'll brush that aside and continue on. Okay. So the thing is, though, that the breath alchemy, which is what you now refer to it, that's what triggered this whole thing. His experience with something that he thought, no, this is, you know, just this won't work, but I'll give it a go anyway. And then he finds you. And then you find a reason to actually write your book, which takes us into a whole different area. And the Mars thing is a nice launch, but this is actually to go further into Earth history and getting into things like the Dogon. I mean, from out of the blue, we're going back into the indigenous beliefs about our history and how we came to be. I love that. That's one of the things I've always been fascinated by, why it's been so discounted and neglected and poo-pooed by mainstream science. Well, this is real. It's true. It's authentic. And we've been told that some of these things are just fairy tales.
We've been told that most of these things are just fairy tales. Well, I'm glad to hear that this is right in your wheelhouse too, because I only wrote about the things that really were truly of interest to me. So I was just excited and just as interested to hear about the Dogons and the Great Pyramid, the truth behind the Great Pyramid, and all the rest of that is quite thankfully most of my readers are when they read it for the first time, because something really strikes an inner resonance with the people who are reading this. Well, that's because, in my sense of it anyway, it's because it did exactly that with me. I have felt like a kid in a toy store who can have anything he wants so many times. Every time I come across a new piece of information, and I'll tell you, back in the early 1990s, it was just coming at me right and left. I mean, virtually every morning I wake up and there's something new that's awaiting me. And talk about kid in a toy store. Life was exciting then. It continues to be an exciting adventure today, because I still have that kid in the toy store mentality. It just never seems to leave. There doesn't seem to be anything I can do about it. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. Don't stop.
Yeah. Well, I have no intention of stopping. Helen Keller said it perfectly. I love one-line quotes, but my favorite of all of them is from Helen Keller, where she, if anybody had reason to not want to get out of bed and complain about how terrible life is, it certainly would have been her. What did she say? She said, life is either an exciting adventure or it's nothing. So I like the exciting adventure part of it rather than nothing. And I know that this is what she was talking about. I know that when life is an exciting adventure, you're here, you're now, you're present. Life shows up in the present moment when you're feeling good, when the inspiration, the creativity, and the joyfulness is all coming through you. That's the function, in my experience, of learning how to transmute stuck energy into life-enhancing energy. In the absence of which, it's nothing, because you're just reduced to going through the motions. Did I say that's my favorite quote?
Yes.
I do believe I did.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You wrote the book, and you included the history, where we came from, how we got here. But it isn't just a history book. This is, we're talking how this is, and the next book that goes along with this, Catching the Ascension Wave, Everything You Need to Know About the Coming Great Awakening. So to give anyone who's listening a hint, that there's more to this than just a history lesson.
The history is just to try and set the record straight, for the simple reason that we can't really know where we are and where we're going until we know where we've been. And the fact is, we've been lied to with regard to our nature, our understanding of history, in so many ways that, you know, the standard line is, well, it all began 3800 BC in Sumeria. And before that, hey, there was nothing but hairy barbarians. And we know who built the Great Pyramid and when, and the Sphinx, and there's no great mystery here. So, you know, what's the big deal? Let's get on with it. Well, you don't have to dig very deep to realize that that is just not true. And when you start digging even deeper, you start coming across some stories that are just absolutely fascinating. You mentioned the Dogons. Well, the Dogons, for example, they have information that they simply cannot have. That is, if you believe the standard version of how it all began in 3800 BC, but if you're willing to broaden your horizon and open up a little bit, you begin to realize that, hey, maybe those guys are onto something. You know, when they were asked, how do you guys know all of what you know? They knew about the precession of the equinoxes, for example. It's a slow 26,000 year cycle that the Earth goes through. Actually, most likely as a function of it being in a binary star system, and we're not quite sure what the other star is, but all the other stars out there are in a binary system, so why not us? So if that's true, it takes 25,920 years for one cycle to complete itself. In other words, for the two planets to make a rotation, two stars, the two suns to make a rotation around each other. And the only way, considering that, there was nothing but hairy barbarians back in the day, the only way back then that you would know that there even is a precession of the equinoxes is constant surveillance of the night sky for a minimum of 2,160 years. Now I ask you, how many people lived a lifespan of 2,160 years? And even if they did, which they didn't, who's going to sit and watch the night sky every night for 2,160 years? So that's just one example. And so a team of scientists finally went. This is when in Timbuktu, interesting name. And they asked them, well, how do you guys know this? Maybe they shouldn't have asked this because they were given an answer that they were not expecting. They said, well, a flying saucer came out of the sky and it landed. And they said some very dolphin-like creatures came out. They dug a big hole, filled it with water, started swimming around in their lake, swimming up to the shore and telling us about their history. And this is what they said. They gave them all of these details. And the scientists are sitting there going, no, I don't think I heard that. They can't because they're married to a certain, this is the way it is. And it's kind of hard to go beyond that. So I just use that as a jumping, a stepping stone to get us on the right path. As I said earlier, we can't really know where we are and how are we going to have any sort of a sense of where we're going until we get a sense of our true history, of our real past. And in so doing, you begin to realize, as I detailed in the book, and now we're getting into what the book is really about, and that's from a big picture perspective, the enormous infusion of higher dimensional energy that's just pouring into the Earth. And in so doing, it's dramatically raising the vibratory rate of the planet and everybody on it. You know, just as I was talking about breath alchemy, transmuting energy on an individual level, it dramatically raises your vibratory rate. Well, that's what's going on to everybody on the planet here, even though it doesn't look that way. But it's looking increasingly like that way, because the very simple fact is there's a displacement process going on here. If I can explain, I would say that if you go into a totally darkened room, you can't see a thing, but you know where the light switch is. The moment you flip on the light switch, tell me, what happened to the darkness?
It vanishes.
Yeah, it's not a trick question. Darkness cannot survive in the presence of light. And so that's what's going on here on a planetary scale. Not only is our individual darkness coming to the surface to be transformed, to be transmuted, as I say, to give us this opportunity to discover our innate ability to do just that, but it's also happening on a global scale. And I detail in both of my newest book, there's been some dark forces running this planet for a long, long time. And they've been pulling the strings from behind the curtain. Now, when they're behind the curtain, they're in the shadows. But now with this enormous infusion of higher dimensional energy that's coming in, the shadows are disappearing because the light is coming into the perspective. And darkness cannot survive in the presence of light. So now their ways are being known, and they can only survive when they're behind the curtain. And I would submit that this is what's going on. There's huge displacement, a huge global healing process. It has to happen that way because we can't, and here's the catch, we are in the middle of not only a personal transformation, but also a global transformation that is allowing us to catch the ride, so to speak, into higher consciousness, where the vibratory rate is much higher, where there's much higher form of unity consciousness. We're all aware on a much higher level that we are, as I suggested earlier, just holograms of the one infinite creator, that we have it all contained within each and every one of us, and that we're not separate beings looking out at a world that is not us, but we're all part of a greater whole. And we're all an integral part of the greater whole because, again, you cannot separate the whole from itself. It's all contained within each and every one of us. That's the holographic nature of the reality. And so this is what's going on, I submit, on a much, much bigger level. You and I, individually and collectively, are in the process, very much the process, of creating the critical mass that enables planet Earth to become lit from within and to literally go into a shorter wavelength universe, a higher dimensional level, nothing less than a dimensional shift, nothing less than what I call the birth of a new humanity, the co-creation of heaven on earth.
Imagine for a minute, imagine the best version of you, where you look and feel your best self, where your confidence shines through every day. This is how your skincare routine should make you feel, an easy-to-use system giving your skin exactly what it needs so you look and feel your best. Well, imagine no more, because Meaningful Beauty has arrived. Businesswoman, entrepreneur, and supermodel Cindy Crawford founded Meaningful Beauty with world-renowned cosmetic specialist Dr. Sabah to share his age-maintenance-focused skincare treatments and formulas. Cindy has been consistently using this breakthrough age-maintenance system to protect her skin and prevent premature signs of aging for over 20 years. If there's proof of the power of consistent age maintenance, you only have to look at Cindy. She's not gorgeous for her age, she's just gorgeous. Inside and out, she's a shining example of a never too early, never too late to start an age maintenance practice that meaningfully embraces your age. Nature provides ways to protect us from the environment, and Meaningful Beauty's secret is a unique and powerful antioxidant derived from a genetically rare melon found only in the south of France, a region known for women having beautiful skin. I love the 7-piece deluxe face and neck skincare system featuring effective serums, treatments, and creams formulated to work together to provide exactly what you need to achieve a more radiant, youthful appearance. Personally, I've been really loving the Youth Activating Melon Serum. It smells so delicious, feels incredible, and my skin looks amazing. And I've been getting so many compliments on how my skin has been looking recently. Over 5 million women have used Meaningful Beauty for its innovative formulas that help achieve radiant, younger-looking skin and hair so you can look and feel your best at every age. That gives you confidence to go out and live your life fully, whatever that means to you. Amazingly, after using Meaningful Beauty for 8 weeks, 100% of women said their skin looks vibrant and bright. It's never too late and it's never too early to start taking care of your skin. Try the Meaningful Beauty 7-piece deluxe face and neck skincare system for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. And remember, your confidence is beautiful too. Tomorrow's gorgeous starts today. Go to meaningfulbeauty.com/glow to receive 25% off and get the targeted treatment duo gift set for free. Go to meaningfulbeauty.com/glow to receive 25% off and get the targeted treatment duo gift set for free. meaningfulbeauty.com/glow.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
I hope that doesn't sound too weird that we've laid enough tracks for at least to begin to take some traction. And we can expand on that to whatever degree you want.
I think let's just go into the deep end of when you're talking about ascension and saying that the body goes too. Well, that's really foreign for most people, and talking about the ascended masters who are already here because they have increased their vibratory level. And some people have actually met an ascended master and said, what the heck? This isn't real. This can't exist. We don't know how this works. So I must be imagining. And they're not imagining. So how about that end?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it would be useful just to dig a little bit deeper into the whole dimensional reality of things, because the ascended masters are on a different dimensional aspect of the planet than you and I are. They're on a much, much shorter wavelength aspect of the planet, where the vibratory rate is much, much higher. And these guys know unity consciousness like we can only imagine. And so when I'm talking about different dimensional worlds, what am I talking about here? I would just simply say that, number one, the key to the whole bit is wavelength. At the base of all of this, well, it's just wavelength. If you look at wavelength, you've got a huge range of possibilities. Some of them are so very tiny that you wouldn't even be able to see them. Others so long they would look like straight lines almost. And you put them together, and what you have is the electromagnetic spectrum. So our reality, ranging from the most distant galaxy to atomic particles, and including the room in which you are sitting and the room in which I'm sitting, is just one universe. And it has a wavelength of 7.23 centimeters. And interestingly enough, this was discovered quite by accident. A couple of astronomers, back in the 1960s, they were working for Bell Labs. And they got their new system all set up, and they pointed into the sky, and there was just static coming from everywhere. They didn't know what to do about it exactly. They realized that it was about 7 centimeters, and what they did was they just, this was installing their microwave system. So what they did was they upped the power by a whole lot, and that kind of tended to solve the problem. But anyway, it was one of my teachers, Drunvala Melchizedek, who suggested that the wavelength of this dimensional reality is 7.23 centimeters. And what that means then is that if you take by wavelength every single particle in this reality and average them out, that's what you're going to get. So 7.23 centimeters. Now, dimensions themselves, they're separated from each other by wavelength, really in exactly the same way as notes are on a musical scale. You know, so if you look at a piano keyboard and just, you know, take the octave in the middle where you've got the 8 white keys, which of course repeats itself in both directions, but you've also got the 5 black keys. There's 13 notes, really 12 notes, the 13th is the return, 12 notes in the chromatic scale. And so the 12 notes in the chromatic scale, they are, because the universe is holographic, you can now take that understanding and transfer it to dimensional realities, because, again, it's the holographic nature of the reality. So you've got all these different worlds. Now, the 12 major universes, again, because of the holographic nature of the reality, you've got 12 smaller versions of it in between each note. So that's referred to in dimensional terms as overtones. So if you're looking at one octave of the reality, you've got the 12 major dimensions, 12 major universes. In between each and every one of them, you've got the 12 overtones. But each overtone is a dimensional world just as vast as this one. So you've got 12 times 12 equals 144 different dimensional worlds in this one octave of existence. And in my books, one of the great documents I discovered back in the day was the Law of One. And I discovered this by studying what was going on in the Egyptian mystery schools and began to realize that where the teacher of the second school, a man by the name of Akhenaten, where did he get his stuff? Well, he got it from the Law of One. And what is the Law of One? Well, I'll get into that in a moment, but to cut to the quick here, the Law of One is just perfect reference to detail the different dimensional nature, the dimensional realities, and how not only our planet, but every third dimensional planet in the cosmos at some point is going to go through a dimensional shift. In other words, at some point in its growth, it's going to go from third dimension to fourth dimension, from the longer, denser wavelength of third dimensional reality, where separation and judgment and all that appears to be real. into the much shorter wavelength, the higher dimensional reality of the fourth dimension, where it's much, much harmonious. The law of one goes on to say that the fourth dimensional reality is at least 100 times more harmonious than even your very best moments here on third dimensional Earth. Now that sounds pretty good to me. So where does the law of one come from? Now this is where it gets really interesting, because in order to get the answer to that, you got to go back, talk about history, 2.6 billion years. And 2.6 billion years ago, looking at our neighbor Venus, this is when Venus went fourth dimensional. And the law of one goes into great detail on how Venus did it and what happened and what percentage of them made it. I think the entire population of the planet was about 38 million, very small population, and only about 6 million made it through. So that raises a couple of questions. Well, if this is real, what happened to the 32 or so million people who didn't make it through? And what happened to the 6 million people or so who did make it through? So would you like to take a look at that?
I think so, yes. Definitely.
Yeah, I think that would be useful. Uh-huh. To me, it's just fascinating. I can only throw this out right now. This is where I really detailed this in Catching the Ascension Wave. But in Catching the Ascension Wave, I go into detail on how exactly nobody is left behind. And the 32 million Venusians who did not make it into the higher worlds were all taken care of, because there are other ET races whose main function seems to be, whenever a planet is about to go fourth dimensional and not everybody's ready, they come and take the non-ascension ready people and transfer them to another third dimensional planet where they can have the opportunity to go through as many lifetimes as they need to alleviate enough karma so that they too can get to the point to where they are ascension ready. Now, those 6 million who made it through, they stepped into the shorter wavelength of the fourth dimension, whereas, as I said earlier, it's at least 100 times more harmonious than even their very best moments on third dimensional Venus. The point being is that this is not something that just happened on Venus, and it's not something that's just going to happen here. As I said earlier, it's something that happens in the life of all third dimensional planets. There's always room for growth and always a room to evolve into. Life never stops. It just keeps on going. And, when you're ready to graduate from fourth to fifth dimension, life will let you know. So to detail the ascended masters, hopefully now it'll make a bit more sense when I tell you that the Venusians, who are also known as the ancient builder race, they are six-dimensional beings, as are the ascended masters here on planet Earth. They are six-dimensional beings, and that's a level of awareness so far beyond where we are that we can just barely begin to imagine. That's where they're at.
Okay, so my question, and I've interviewed somebody recently who went into a portal. He saw a light, saw the portal, ran to it and through it. And when he was there, he met other beings, and not necessarily, one-on-one. He said it was kind of fuzzy and it was difficult for him to acclimate, so he was a little woozy. He saw them enough to know that they were about 7 feet tall. They looked human. And their response to him was, "You don't belong here." And they made sure that he got back. The other person who followed him into that dimension had a different experience. He was escorted by someone we wouldn't refer to as a Bigfoot, who took him through what he considered a maze and then escorted him back. These two guys returned to tell their story. They found themselves in different locations and had to meet at the same place that they had been prior to this little event. But that is a different dimension, and that's here and now. And these guys are still scratching their heads over what the heck happened. One says in a heartbeat he would go back. But when he was told you don't belong here, then obviously that he's not in sync with that dimension. I just think that's a fascinating story. And then I've also had my own experiences of seeing a couple of beings at the foot of my bed carrying a clipboard, wearing cloaks, and having them say, "She's awake," and they vanished. And so knowing that all they had to do was shift their dimension and I can't see them anymore. These things are real. We have no way to really, I think, make them in our reality something that's hardcore substance. We just keep telling these stories saying something's going on. We don't know what's happening. And where do we go from here? Does that make sense to you?
Well, those are fascinating stories that you told, sharing your own experience, and also of these other two guys. Yeah, there's other worlds. They're all right here, and they're all occupying the very space in which you and I are sitting. Of course, we're not sitting in the same room, but all dimensional worlds are in the room I'm in. All dimensional worlds are in the room that you're in, and they're all separated by wavelength. They're separated by wavelength and also a 90-degree shift. And so if you knew how to change your conscious wavelength, in other words, to tune to the dimensional world that you wanted to move into, and also to shift by 90 degrees, you would disappear from this reality. And you would reappear in whatever dimensional world that you would tune to, and you'd be just as real there as you are here. Now that was really an amazing story that you told about, you know, these guys and their dimensional adventures, if you will.
Yeah.
And then to cap it off by telling your own story of it. So it's very real for you. I hear that loud and clear. And we're about to discover that too, because this dimensional shift, I make the case for it, you know, not just throwing it out, but getting into the details of it. And look, it could happen any day, any time. We're ready. We're ready to go. Now, I don't know if everybody on the planet is ready to go right yet, but plenty of people are. I feel the reason it hasn't happened yet is because, very simply, we need, you and I individually and collectively, we need to fully clean up the mess that we've made here. Before we have to be conscious, we have to show that we've been conscious caretakers of planet Earth. And we haven't really done a very good job of that yet. But we can clean up the mess that we've made, because on the global scale, the technology does exist to clean up all of the pollution and to just turn this into a heaven on Earth almost literally overnight. And that's just part of the suppressed technology that the global elite have been holding on to for a long, long time. You know, the puppet masters that have been pulling the strings from behind the curtain. But I'm sorry, the curtain has vanished, and they are now exposed to the light of day. So these things are coming out. And I do feel that before the actual shift happens, and I can say more about that later, but I do feel that before the actual shift happens, that we will be given access to a level of awareness, technologically speaking, that would absolutely blow most people's minds completely. Not only the anti-gravity technology, but the, like I suggested earlier, the ability to clean up all the pollution and to turn this into a heaven on Earth almost overnight. So there's the cleaning up the mess that we've made on a grand scale. On an individual scale, the more we can raise our vibratory rate, in other words, the more we can discover and ultimately master our innate ability to transmute stuck energy into life-enhancing energy, so we can rediscover the present moment, so we can experientially know that we're not just separate from looking at a body out at a world that is not us, and that we have no connection to each other. Nothing could be further from the truth. The great, great truth is that you and I are creating this entire show all the way out to the most distant stars. And when you fully grasp the holographic nature of this reality, you begin to understand just what I said there. And so life is so vast. There is so much more going on than, you know, just the little sliver that we've been exposed to. And so it just leads me to the conclusion that life is an exciting adventure, and that we are in these end times. And even though it seems, for the moment, like the polarity gap is wider than it's ever been, I submit that it is exactly what needs to be happening, because the darkness needs to be brought to the surface so that it can be transmuted into the light, so that we can become ascension ready on a global scale and make this shift into a world that is so many times more harmonious than what we experience now that Every day will be like a kid in a toy store.
I want to know more about the ET races that have been basically derailing some of our ascension. In terms of working behind the scenes and running a program contrary to what we are told, because they can and we don't see them. One of the experiences I've talked to, John Foster, his experience is decades of being programmed to run a certain type of a clinic or a school or what will we call it, a halfway house for children who would be coming up migrants from South America. And they were told that back in the, I think when he was going through this, it would have been probably the 60s or 70s that they were making preparations for this to happen. He had a bunch of memories in 1986, a download that then pretty much threw him for a loop because of his ability to actually reconcile that. His body did a major downshift, heart attack, that kind of thing. And when he recovered, then he's starting to tell people, this is what's happening. This is what's going on. You can't see it. I've watched people frozen and they are unable to, at that point, remember anything that happened to them, but he still has conscious awareness of it. So he's talking about this hidden reality and obviously, you know, a different dimension where they're running a program contrary to what we are aware of. And how does that deal with our ascension when we're dealing with these other elements that we may or may not see?
Well, that's a great question. And I'd like to just begin by giving it what I'd like to call a big picture perspective. And from a big picture perspective, you've got the forces of light and you've got the forces of darkness. Let's call the forces of light the great white brotherhood, the guys in the white hats, and the forces of darkness, the great dark brotherhood, they're wearing black hats. And so on the surface, they are opposed to each other in just about every conceivable way you can think of. The forces of light, and I'm talking about the higher dimensional aspect of the forces of light right now, their commitment is to do everything they can to raise our consciousness, to raise our vibratory rate as quickly as possible so that we can move into the light and get on with this ascension process just as soon as possible. Well, the forces of darkness, on the other hand, their job is to do everything they can to keep us stuck, to keep us stuck in fear, and to keep us stuck in limitation. So we're just like frozen, like deer looking in at the headlight.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks like there's this eternal struggle going on. And, you know, we all know the forces of light, well, they're the good guys, and so they need to win. But that's only from the perception of polarity consciousness, where we judge everything as good and evil, because we're living life conceptually from our reactive mind, good and evil consciousness, from a higher perspective. From the perspective of unity consciousness, fourth dimension and higher, these two seemingly opposing forces are actually working together as timing agents. There's only one spirit moving through all life everywhere. Everything is a perfectly functioning hologram of the one creator, and you cannot separate the whole from itself. So there are actually two different aspects of the one spirit working together as timing agents. Timing is everything. Because if you move before the timing is right, the fear will take over. But if you've given yourself an opportunity to integrate, to get the lesson that the darkness is trying to show you, now you can truly move ahead in an integrated higher vibratory rate. I can give an example of that comes to mind, really a perfect life example in my view. Back about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago or so, I was driving, I live in California, so I was driving clear across the country to get to all my different workshops. I was giving a workshop somewhere every weekend. I was in Ohio. You know, the skies were ominous. I knew that. But I also knew I had to get to Syracuse, New York, because I had a workshop to give, and that was that. So I just got in my car and drove. And boy, I ran into the most intense storm that I never experienced anything like it. The winds 50 miles an hour or greater is what it seemed like, doing everything they can to try and blow me off the road. The rain coming down in sheets, it would not slow it up. You could hardly see, and I just had to keep going. Couldn't park underneath the overpasses because yeah, they were all filled with parked cars trying to get out of the storm. So I just had to keep going. And I'm so glad that I was in touch with my innate ability to integrate the fear, because the fear transmuted from keeping me stuck and keeping me stopped from doing the exact worst thing, you know, like going against the skid and slamming on the brakes and wondering why I'm parked in some guy's trunk, to just being totally, totally alert in the moment. It transformed itself into one of the most interesting and exciting experiences that I really think I've ever had, because I was so totally present, so completely alert. My senses were so heightened that it was just truly exciting. That is up to a certain degree. After about an hour or so of that, I finally came to a town, Toledo, Ohio. I said, "Holy Toledo, I'm going to get myself a motel room, and this is it for the day." But I got to tell you that if I had not had my ability to be integrated into the present moment, that would have been, accidents could have happened real, real easy. So that's an example of what I mean when I say that had I ignored the fears within me and tried to suppress them, then I'm ignoring the fact that the light and the dark are actually two different aspects of the same thing working together. And so the darkness within me was just trying to get my attention and just basically letting me know that if I can find a more useful way of relating to the energetic component of the fear, and there was plenty of fear, if I could find a more useful way of relating to the feeling of fear than making it wrong, that I could integrate it into my sense of well-being and be totally alert and be totally present. And that's exactly what happened. So instead of ignoring the darkness, instead of trying to push it away, which is what we do in polarity consciousness, you expand to include it. There, you can't separate the whole from itself. You cannot separate the darkness within you from the light within you. You expand to include it, and in so doing, integrate that which is incomplete into wholeness. So now you are whole and complete. You are now becoming lit from within, and you're ready to very much participate in the creation of the critical mass of planet Earth. Well, it was shifting from polarity to unity, because in polarity I would have fought and I would have resisted, and I would have done exactly the worst thing in the worst moment. Mm-hmm. If it was a snowstorm, if it was a blizzard, and you're driving on a sheet of ice, you know, that's where you slam on your brakes and you turn with the skid. And like I say, you wonder why you're smashed into a tree or somebody's trunk. But if you can go with it, and that's the shift from polarity into unity. You don't think it. It's not positive thinking. You've got to feel it in your body as your living experience. And that comes from the ability to transmute energy. And so that's coming from integrated wholeness. And that's exactly the sort of transformation that we need to make on a collective scale in order to shift into the fourth dimension and into creating the critical mass that'll allow it to all take place.
And but I you have the that benefit that of knowing how to breathe. The breathing, I think, that is a whole different mind shift that says that just the opposite of a fear-based reality or reaction. Your breath is huge. And so when you're talking about having renamed it as you work with it now, that I think is another element that in some ways you're just taking for granted, because it's a part of who you are. And when people work with you, they can feel the difference. And again, reading the testimonials, it's almost like an immediate shift in your body where you become more integrated into your being versus just going through the motions.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the shift right there. And yeah, I've been doing this for a long time, and I take it for granted because I expect it to happen. It's just no big deal to me. But with that said, at the same time, I am absolutely amazed. I'm absolutely amazed every time I experience a completed energy cycle, and I do it on a regular basis, give myself breath alchemy sessions. But I'm also very pleased and very amazed when it happens to clients too. And at the same time, I expect it. So I got that interesting, yeah, it's no big deal, and it is a big deal going on at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's how you wrote a book.
that's for sure. I couldn't have done it without that, because back in the day, writing that book, it just felt impossible. You know, I didn't know where to start. I felt, well, I'll start on what I know best, but I didn't, you know, I couldn't even hardly write a paragraph. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I just felt totally hopelessly lost. And I just decided that, you know, if I have to give myself a breath session every morning, that's what I need to do in order to get to the point to where I can go from this is impossible, I can't do it, to, yeah, it is a challenge, but it's an exciting challenge. It's an exciting adventure. So let's get on with it. And if I could at least take one small step forward today, that's one step closer to the completed project. And so that internal thing went on. It just went on every day until it finally became a book.
There are some people who think, you know, we're living in the end times, but they don't see it as a positive. They see it as death, destruction, Armageddon, all of that. And that isn't really what this is about when you're getting into your version of the end times. This is like a liberation and a transcendence, which is completely, I think, in terms of polarity, the opposite of the mindset that people are putting out at this, or some people are putting out at this time. This isn't a destruction. This is a basically rejuvenation, a reset.
That's true. However, to be clear, to get a better idea of the big picture perspective on all of this, there is potential. Absolutely, there is a potential for some earth changes. But don't worry about it, because we're going to be taken care of no matter what happens. Even if the worst of the earth change happens, we're going to be okay throughout all of it. Like I suggested earlier, that there appears to be certain ETs throughout the cosmos whose main function seems to be to come in and take care of people who are not ascension ready. And just before, if the worst of the worst does happen, I mean like pole shifts and solar flashes and stuff like that, we're not going to be here to experience it. Those who are ascension ready will have gone into the fourth dimension before that happens. Those who are not will have been transported to another third dimensional planet, like I said, where they will be given the opportunity to go through as many lifetimes as they need to transmute enough of their karma so that they can become ascension ready too. So we're not going to be there for the worst of the worst if indeed that it does happen. So I would suggest worrying about that is optional. And yeah, I do give the details on solar flashes and pole shifts and all that nasty stuff, nasty sounding stuff. But don't worry about it. It is a big deal. But that's just part of what a third dimensional planet goes through. And the reason it does is because the planet is a body. It's a living body, just like in our living bodies. If you and I individually are not very conscious and caretakers of our body, it's going to start barking back at us in very unuseful and very unpleasant ways. Because when a body becomes full enough of stuck energy, you get on all these unresolved emotions, the anxieties, the fears, the frustrations, and in later stages, you get the illness and you get the disease, and I submit that it is all a function of that unresolved stuck energy, that unresolved emotional and, in many cases, physical trauma that everybody to some degree experience, some people more than others. But that's the deal right there. Kind of lost my train there, but that's okay. I get carried away sometimes.
It's the ascension train, okay?
Yeah, that's the big picture right there. But yeah. I started talking about this and that, and I forgot why am I talking about that? But that's the way it goes sometimes. These things are fun. I just love doing it.
Well, I think, you know, just you needed a launching point. And when he had the breathwork session with you and experienced a real, this is legit moment, then he could say, look, you've got more to add. And so that was the catalyst to get you thinking about, well, what can I add? And then to go back, this is 30 years, the 30-year anniversary, believing in it enough to say, this is still relevant. It really is something that we can revisit from the next generation to say, look, folks, this stuff has already been laid out and we're still evolving to understand and have some of the stuff that you mentioned in the previous go-round actually verified and validated.
To me, again, it's just all an exciting adventure. I just go back to how exciting it was for me back in the day to just discover all of this stuff, when the fact is I had no idea what I was looking for, but I knew that you don't have to know, that all you really need is to have that burning desire, that you to be so enthralled, to be so excited by what you're about to discover, even though you don't know what it is. Just getting up in the morning, every morning, becomes a really fun experience. And that's what I went through every single day. I discovered back in June of 1992, a guy by the name of Drunvala Melchizedek, through workshops that were presented on video. I didn't go to see a live, I did, but then in June of 92, with a group of about 20 people, I was watching 32 hours of a video, of a live workshop on video that was called The Flower of Life. And that detailed a lot of this information. And it gave me leads as to where to look to find out, for example, about the Dogons that we talked about a little bit earlier, and to find out about what's going on with the Mayans, what's going on with the Palladians and the Venusians. And it just kept on going from there to there. It just never stopped. So I quickly realized that I had discovered a real pot of gold here, and it just kept on going. And now back to Richard, the publisher who asked me to write a book, I was just sharing my enthusiasm with him. I was not auditioning to write a book, but he saw evidently something within me that I never even considered, that I was very much tied to what he called a couple of different, very interesting mystery schools. Not only all the stuff that was going back in the day in ancient Egypt, but also what was going on with the Ascended Masters and some of the more interesting characters in history, like Babaji, for example. Now, Babaji, I learned a lot from him, a lot of good stuff. Who's Babaji? Well, if you've ever heard of the book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, there is a chapter in that book called Babaji, the Yogi Christ of Modern India. And if you can accept 10% of what that chapter is telling you, if you can accept 1% of what that chapter is telling you, you can begin to realize this guy Babaji is somebody very special indeed. And I had some personal experiences with him back in the day that I would say is fair to say transformed my life forever. Also gave me the keys to discovering what I'm telling you about, what I've learned about breath alchemy and about transmuting energy. I'm so glad I went there and did that. And I had to go through and jump through a series of hoops, or my experience of meeting Babaji never, ever would have happened. I had to jump through some hoops that at the time were very uncomfortable indeed. But the question the universe is asking you, well, do you have a burning desire or not? And if you do, let's just get on with it, okay? And you do what you're supposed to do here. And what I was supposed to do was to, go to Europe on a shoestring budget, where I only had enough money to pay for a one-way ticket to London. How am I ever going to get back? Did that bring up some fear, some frustration, some anxiety? I'll tell you what, it triggered me like I didn't even know possible. But that was such an integral part of my healing experience, that had I not done that, and had not earlier enrolled in the same program by withdrawing every penny from my life savings, you and I would not be having this conversation today. Had I not done those very unpleasant, very uncomfortable things at the time. So sometimes you've got to do what the spirit within you is just telling you. Get off the dime and listen to spirit without hesitation, and do what you need to do. And life will turn out as a result.
What was
Absolutely
it like?
Absolutely my experience. What was it like meeting him? It seemed perfectly normal. Perfectly normal. Just like it's exactly what was supposed to happen. It hardly dawned on me that this is so extraordinary that from a normal third dimensional aspect of reality, this is something that just absolutely cannot be happening, yet it was happening. And it just seemed so normal and so natural and so not a big deal that it just became very easy to internalize it, to accept it on some level. Now, having said that, it took a full 12 years or more for me to really begin to dig down and get to the bottom line meaning of just what it was, what my experience really meant. It was a total mind blower. But what made it so easy was, like I said, it just seemed so easy and so normal, so not a big deal that to this day I'm amazed. You know, I could go into the details of it, and actually I do in my books, but I'll let you read my book to get down to what the details are.
Okay. Well, there are two books we're talking about, Catching the Ascension Wave, and then the other one, Nothing in This Book is True, But It's Exactly How Things Are.
Yeah, the 30th anniversary edition of Nothing in This Book is True. And to that, I want to say that I do believe I mentioned that it 30 years ago, it caught wildfire and became a bestseller almost instantly overnight. So there's a lot of people who have read that edition and will be very pleasantly surprised to realize that this new edition has 10 completely new chapters, and there's not one chapter in the book that has not been left untouched, that has not been updated and added to, and just significantly enhanced. So really, anybody who has read the early edition and not the new edition will be very pleased to realize that, hey, I'm reading a brand new book. Yet the bones of the original edition are still in place. It's just been greatly enhanced and added to.
From what I see, the way we believe about certain things, about the history and the things we've been able to piece together, it's contemporary. It has been, I think, improved.
Yeah, greatly improved. You know, I was given an opportunity when I was asked to write the newest edition, and I began to realize that, you know, even though this book has sold very well and is still doing well, I look at the book and there's parts of it I just kind of cringe and go, I wrote that? What a, yeah.
That's normal.
You know?
That's normal.
Yeah. And I had a lot of that going on. And so I realized, wow, what an amazing opportunity I'm given here. I can take this book and clean it up to my specifications. I can get it to the point to where, for me, it is just really harmonizing. It's just really singing. It just reads exactly the way I want it to read. And I do feel I've done that. And you just said it. I'm my own toughest critic. So if I like it, pretty good chance that it's a pretty good book. I do feel it is my personal masterpiece. If I can ever write another book as good as this one, I'll be very pleased.
The website, bobprizzell.com?
Yeah, bobprizzell.com. And if you go to my website, I'll say a couple things about it. First of all, you can learn where to get my books. Easiest place is Amazon. Go to Barnes & Noble. Go to the publisher, Inner Traditions. Lots of ways to get the book. But also, if you go to bobprizzell.com, look at my blog posts. I got a ton and a half of good blog. I like the blog posts that will give you some, I think, very useful insight as to what we're talking about here. Useful and very practical that you can take with you, put it into your tool bag, and use that as part of your transformational process. And if you'd like to go further, I absolutely recommend you check out my books. The two newest ones you just mentioned, I would suggest go with the 30th anniversary edition of Nothing and go to Catching the Ascension Wave if you like what you read in Nothing. Then if you want to know more, you can go to my website and schedule a 30-minute free consultation. I love to talk to people, and I learn a lot by talking to people and have a great time doing it. I would love to talk to you, but I would really like for you to, you know, be up to speed enough to at least look at the blog posts and hopefully to have read at least one of the two books, and schedule some time to talk, and we'll take it from there.
Well, I think the breath work is huge, because there's so much that can change when you just change the way you breathe. And it's, I don't know, I can't say it enough, that it can happen instantly, that you can heal things that you thought were beyond healing and beyond help just by learning how to accept being who you are in the moment at this time and being okay with that. And breathing is the first step. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, just to put a lid on the breathing, what the breathing does, in Breath Alchemy, I teach a certain breathing rhythm that I call circular breathing. What circular breathing does is it gives you access to source energy. Now, I suggested earlier that you and I are perfectly functioning holograms of the whole. That means every bit of the whole is contained within each and every one of us. And so in the process of reconnecting to that wholeness, it's very useful to discover your innate ability through circular breathing to get that life force energy moving through your body in huge quantities, enough to access your innate ability to discover your healing abilities to transmute energy. When I say source energy, I'm talking about life force energy, the very energy of life itself, most commonly called prana. If there was not prana or life force energy, there would be no life, no life anywhere. Prana is the most vital of all the energies. But as I just suggested earlier, that most people are subventilating, holding their breath relative to the possibility. And in so doing, never ever discovering their innate healing ability, because that comes from opening up your breathing and letting the prana flow through in increased amounts. And then recognizing that the job of the prana is twofold. Number one, to create this increased energy flow through your body, to tune in and to feel that. And secondly, to realize that in its healing endeavor, what it does is it brings up a packet of stuck energy that you've been fighting due to judgment, due to making it wrong, and to give you an opportunity to revisit it so you can find a more useful way of relating to it than making it wrong, relax into it and make peace with it instead of war, to allow yourself to have a thorough experience of exactly what it feels like, and in so doing, discover your innate ability to transmute that life-detracting energy into life-enhancing energy, and that's exactly what's contained in the power of the breath and in Breath Alchemy as I teach it.
Bob, thank you. I really appreciate you for doing what you're doing and for updating the book and making it available to a new audience in addition to people who are ready for the refresher.
Well, thanks, Wendy. I appreciate hearing you saying that. And I greatly appreciate having the opportunity to hear you say that. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for having me on. I've enjoyed every moment of it, and wish you nothing but the best. And I know you're doing great work out there. So it's just been truly a pleasure. I'll come back anytime you want.
Thank you. Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.